What do you think triggered the U.S. investigation? Obviously, it took a while, but why now?
Well, I think, you know, the Department of Justice has been quite activist in terms of corruption investigations, particularly in the last 2-3 years. The fact that this had come to light in Europe in relation to Telia Sonera gave them an opportunity, I think, to say, to start their own investigation. Whether there's a political motivation, I'm sure they would deny that. It doesn't seem to me to be an obvious political motivation. It seems that this has simply been a case where they've found a possibility to get involved and to tackle some of these major mobile phone corporations where there's been a lot of concern in the past about the way some of these telephone companies have been operating, particularly in Eurasia, but not only. So I think they've seen it as another chance for Justice Department to be quite activist in relation to corrupt practices or alleged corrupt practices particularly by foreign companies, of course. The United States effectively can achieve a kind of extraterritorial jurisdiction, right? Because even companies that don't list on American stock exchanges, many of that transactions still pass through the United States because they're doing dollar transactions. And so even European companies or Russian companies can be vulnerable to prosecution under the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act or other American legislation. So the United States authorities have tremendous reach, even where a company is not a U.S. company.
And how many companies are involved in this investigation? In our count, David, it is 8. France, Switzerland, Sweden, Norway, the United States, Ireland, Belgium, and Luxembourg. Are there any other countries that are involved in some way?
That's what I've heard of, yes. I mean, I suspect as we look into it, there may be others. There may be some offshore zones. We know that there have been companies in offshore zones used. There may be other bank accounts in other European countries. This is an incredibly complex international set of business transactions, and so you wouldn't be surprised to see that list expand, I think.
And, I mean, to what extent can we think they are cooperating with each other? We know that they are communicating, but then cooperating is a different thing, right?
Yes, it's quite hard to say. I mean, I think with a lot of these investigations, you see European authorities being quite slow sometimes to investigate or finding it quite hard to investigate because of procedural problems, and the Americans being often much more aggressive in pursuing these cases from overseas. So it doesn't necessarily mean there's a lack of cooperation because of some major sort of political difference, but often it's just a very complex area of law which makes it hard, particularly for European countries like Switzerland, which has this long tradition of banking secrecy, for example. For those kind of countries, it's quite hard to find proper ways to cooperate. But the authorities claim they're cooperating, and I'm sure that in many cases they are. It's just quite a complex area, and it takes a long time to pull this together.
The Wall Street Journal reported recently how the probe has actually been bogged down by the complexities of cross-border judicial cooperation. And apparently some folks have expressed hope when they talk to the Wall Street Journal that America can now speed up investigation because it is involved now.
Yeah, I think a lot of people involved in, you know, been following this case have been frustrated by how slow, you know, the Swiss and the Swedish investigations have been. And there's a hope that the United States, pressure from the United States, you know, which can apply a lot more resources and often has a good deal of information at its fingertips, that can push things along. And we've seen a similar case, of course, in the case of FIFA. The U.S. Really prompted the European authorities to act in a case where for many years they hadn't acted. So the America can apply a good deal of pressure to European Union authorities, who are often quite slow to act in these kind of cases.
And to what extent can the government of Uzbekistan be pressured to be involved in this? Because, I mean, obviously there are no signs from the Uzbek authorities that they're working with these governments. And when we ask European authorities, you know, to what extent they're working with Uzbekistan, they say nothing. The Tashkent doesn't basically respond to any of those requests. I know you've been studying and researching on this for a while. Do you believe that at some point Uzbekistan actually at least communicated with the European governments, for example, where the cases started, let's say, in 2012, right? That's when a case was opened in Switzerland.
Yes, I mean, it's very difficult to tell. I mean, I think for the most part, the Uzbek authorities seem perhaps a little bit out of their depth in dealing with this in international jurisdictions. But there's clearly also probably it's wrong to think of the Uzbek government just as a single entity. There's obviously different vested interests and different business interests who at various times might have reached out informally to try and get involved. You know, it's worth remembering we're talking about really some very large funds here, a lot of expensive property, a lot of assets, hundreds of millions of dollars of assets. And so inevitably it comes outside the merely sort of formal channels between governments. But I think unlike you know, countries like Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan has not been very good at engaging internationally in these kind of areas. It doesn't have the same level of sort of legal expertise and the ability to deal maybe in some of these complex official matters. So it seems to me that, yeah, Uzbekistan has not really been engaging. And also, of course, because the more it gets involved, the more publicity emerges, and the more this can open up really quite serious problems inside Uzbekistan itself.
And the big question on the minds of many people is what will happen to the assets that have been frozen or in the process of being frozen across Europe? What happens to them?
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously lots of questions there. It's a very complex process to seize or freeze assets. And we'll have to wait and see to what extent that actually happens and how much there is. But there are some interesting discussions even now about the possibility of trying to use those assets in ways that would be useful to people inside Uzbekistan. In other words, you know, there have been a couple of cases where the United States has pursued settlements whereby the money has gone to charities or to groups trying to help people inside the country. In other words, not simply going back to the government. Whether that's possible in the case of Uzbekistan, I think, is less likely. There was a case in Kazakhstan where such an institution was set up, and perhaps it was relatively successful. Case of Uzbekistan, I think it'd be much harder. But clearly there'll be some interesting discussions around that, and it's something that certainly lots of activists and non-governmental organizations are interested in pursuing.
Wow, absolutely. Can the Uzbek government request those funds? I know you don't want to speculate, and we definitely don't want to speculate, but what if the Uzbek government says, fine, you know, we'll work with the European authorities, but we want the funds come our way?
Yeah, that's clearly a possibility. You know, one theory was that these prosecutions of people around Gulnara Karimova was a sort of first step towards establishing a legal right to some of these funds. But that process is also quite complex. And, you know, we've seen, as you said, a sort of murky situation around those arrests. And it's not quite clear which direction that is going. So until there's some really sort of clear process of prosecution whereby the government asserts a genuine legal right to those funds, I think it's rather difficult. And I think the government will be sort of in two minds. On the one hand, of course, they do want to lay claim to the money and the assets. On the other hand, if doing so opens up lots of questions about internal workings of the Uzbek government and the origins of these assets, then it could be quite a difficult process for them. But I think given the size of the funds, at some point the government will certainly try to try to lay claim to them.
At the center of all this is President's daughter, Gulnara Karimova, and also Techiland Limited, a company which was registered in Gibraltar in 2004, a company which you have studied. Can we say that at this point this company does not exist anymore, or is it still there officially?
I don't know the answer to that, to be honest. I think that certainly the registered owner of the company, Gabana Kayan, of course, is... as far as we know, in prison in Uzbekistan, and so we assume that the company at least is non-functioning. But there's a whole network of companies, of course, that were linked to these business deals. Of course, nobody's been charged in relation to any of these companies yet.
Right, no individual or a company, actually. Nobody has been charged as part of these investigations.
Yeah, right. So although, for example, the Swedish prosecutors are still pursuing this case, as far as I understand, there have been no charges laid yet. And of course, these are really complex processes, partly because some aspects of these business deals, well, on the face of them, not break the law, right? I mean, it's quite a complicated legal area. So... and it's quite hard to gather evidence. It's very hard to gather evidence inside Uzbekistan, of course. And lots of this is done in offshore zones, where, again, it's hard to gather evidence. So you can understand that prosecutors are in some of those quite a slow game. But I suspect that the involvement of the U.S. authorities will encourage European authorities to try to speed things up where that's possible. Whether there will be charges, of course, is an open question. But I think now you can see the Department of Justice is working quite actively on this case, and that will probably put some pressure on the authorities in perhaps Sweden and Switzerland to try and push forward with this case as well.
Meanwhile, these mobile companies are doing very well in Uzbekistan, David. As you know, I mean, I was reading yesterday how MTS, which is now back in Uzbekistan as UMS, is planning to gain over 1 million new customers by the end of this year. The businesses are doing well. I mean, all these companies are now accused by the United States and by European authorities of bribing their way into Uzbekistan. But their businesses inside the country seems to be doing fine.
Well, I mean, of course, the reason why European countries like TeliaSonera went into these difficult environments like Eurasia was because it was a really, really unpenetrated market with a lot of potential subscribers who didn't have mobile phones. And you've seen the growth has been phenomenal, right, inside each of these states. And so the profit potential has been huge. Admittedly, number of subscribers doesn't always translate into profits. And these companies have had problems repatriating profits. We know about the convertibility problems inside Uzbekistan. But nevertheless, clearly there's big market opportunities, and that's why these companies have been competing against each other to get in there. The interest involved here are not just these assets we're talking about in Western Europe, but also in the market for telephone and telecommunications, not just in Uzbekistan, but you could say across wider parts of Eurasia, because the same problems have been reported in other countries in the region as well. There's a lot at stake here, not just in terms of these assets, but in terms of the telecoms market across the whole region.
Can we say that the current investigations will not hurt these companies in Uzbekistan?
The Justice Department, for example, has in the past imposed very significant fines and penalties on companies where it has found evidence of corrupt dealings. And so there is a potential serious problem for companies that are liable to Foreign Corrupt Practices Act if they're found to have broken the law. We're not there yet, of course, but certainly any company now entering these kind of markets is having to think quite seriously about the potential downside to their business that can come from getting involved in these very difficult and complex business environments. And so I think we'll see this having wider ramifications for, you know, Western investors in Central Asia, the Caucasus, and other parts of the former Soviet Union.
Very interesting. Thank you so much, David. I can talk to you forever about all these matters. I don't think this is a story that's going to end anytime soon. I think it's just going to drag on for a long time.
No, that's right. And I think there's lots more information to come here. And as this investigation develops, we'll see lots more information coming out into the public domain as well, I think.
Thank you so much.